Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggly.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw. And you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey, what it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Yes, indeed. We are at episode 595, live and direct. I'm your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin, and this show is sponsored by Cocaine Buddy Boy Entertainment, Screwball Radio, Da Vinci Clothing. Got my host, T-Mass, with the facts on the line. What's good, man?
Man, what it do, what it do. Second show of 2024, Off the Cuff Radio is back in here for more. Shout out to our co-host, Mr. Elada Sandman, Lady Chinchilla, of course, DJ Sincere of Dirty Basin Radio up in New York City. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, tonight is another championship chapter in the illustrious history of Off the Cuff Radio with an equally illustrious and legendary guests. As Roots once said in the chorus, if you've seen it or heard it, then probably I did it. And this man we have tonight is a musical prodigy of infinite proportions. His talent is tremendous. He is an author. He is a legendary power player in both coasts of Hot 97 and Power 106 of New York and Los Angeles, California, respectively. And in turn, we haven't even gotten into the part about him playing a role in some of the biggest hip-hop classics to ever touch radio. This man has headed up production and promotion, coach like a master strategist for Puffy, Janet Jackson, Jay-Z, Mariah Carey. Hell, he's even the one that got Dr. Dre and Snoop back together to do Chronic 2001. And he's also an author. This man's accolades are beyond legendary. They are awesome. They are impactful to the culture. He is a true treasure to what Off the Cuff represents in terms of how we carry on tradition doing what we do. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the multi-talented, multi-platinum producer, Damian Demeza Young. Welcome to Off the Cuff Radio.
Welcome aboard, brother.
Wow. After an intro like that, I was like, who the hell are they talking about? Oh my God.
I was like, man, let Max do the prime time intro for real.
Well, I'm like humbled, but I'm like, you know, wow, thank you. You know, you don't think about what you're doing when you do it. You know what I mean? I've just been such a hip hop fan my whole life, that, you know, it's just go and you let the music lead you. I mean, every writer will tell you that when you're writing a song, you know you have a hit when you go, what was that? You know, every creative person, you know, when that creative thing takes over and you go into that autopilot thing and the momentum just kind of takes over, it's awesome, man. And you don't really realize what's happening until, like, later on down the line when Off the Cuff says some stuff like that.
Well, one thing about it, Damien, is your influence and your impact has gone beyond records. You have shaped the culture and molded it in a fashion that is for the better in terms, and the stories, look, the stories that we talked about off air, and some we can actually mention on air, you know, but I didn't even put in the intro that you were in the Source Power 30. I mean, and you did it three times as being in the top five of influential power players. Dude, this is like you having Jordan and LeBron, Magic Johnson, Kareem and Kobe stats all in one. Yes.
Oh,
the
wow.
resume is impeccable.
Damn, I hired you to do my bio. Lord have mercy.
Hey, we'll talk about it.
I'm humble, man. I'm humble. But thank you.
I mean, you're very welcome. I mean, I guess we get right to it. Santa Barbara, born and raised, you are.
Yep.
I mean, your resume is incredible. So we get to the genesis, like Nas spit on Illmatic. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Well, you know, I was born in Santa Barbara, California, and my dad was about 16. And my mom was 15. He was a biker, and she, I mean, frankly, was an addict. And, you know, I got dropped off on my grandma's doorstep at about a year old, like a lot of kids. And, you know, my parents just weren't ready to be parents. So my grandma took me in, and she raised me. And, you know, she was always so supportive and said, you know, you can do anything. And she gave me a boombox one year for Christmas. And I flipped the switch and, you know, listened to the tapes that I had gotten. And you know the old Biggie line, when the tape pops, you know, you know, the tape pops. So I hit the radio thing, and they gave out the phone number. And I was like, whoa, what's this? You know, I was like 12 years old. And Michael Newman, who basically is the godfather of radio, who's like developed rotations, and Steve Smith, who was Hot 97 in its heyday, were the program director and music director of my local radio station. And they're like the godfathers of radio. So the best mentors I could possibly ask for in the world. And, you know, I just bugged Michael until he invited me down. And I became his intern. And I had this love for music. Anything, you know, that was music related, I gravitated to. And, you know, they taught me. And one night a DJ didn't show up. And Dynamite Darren Stone said, look, 16, 15, whatever it was, you sound like a chipmunk. Don't talk too much. And go ahead, you're on the radio. And I got my shot. So I became the night jock. Then I became the music director. And then they, at 17, they said, you could be the program director. And
oh,
I was like the youngest, you know what I mean? Like, I was like blown away. But they said, we know you want to do hip-hop, but there's no market for that here. And this was in that stage when they kept saying hip-hop was over. And Vanilla Ice and MC Hammer, you know, all of this kind of stuff. So they said, you have to do alternative. So I went to my grandma, and I said, well, what do I do? And she said, well, you could take this as an opportunity and learn from it and do something that's outside of your wheelhouse. Surround yourself with people smarter than you at what you want to do to teach you and be successful at it. And then you can be diverse in what you do. So, and you have to excuse me a little bit when I talk about my grandma. She passed last week. So we literally have no role.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. We literally have the thing this Saturday, so I'm still a little bit, you know, in that.
We understand. Shot. We understand.
No,
we understand.
So please forgive me if I'm a little slow.
It's okay. It's okay.
But she, you know, she like, for instance, when Michael Newman said, "Come on down," here I am, this 12-year-old kid. It's 7 to midnight. My grandma would sleep in the parking lot and wait for me. She had 3 jobs. She had 2 kids. She had me now. So, you know, supporting the 3 kids, putting my aunt through college and, you know, doing all these things, my dad being off, being a biker, and, you know, getting in trouble, bailing him out, all that kind of stuff. It just, you know, it all kind of came together, and all of these influences, and the music was my escape. So I just kept going and kept learning and doing the alternative and, you know, breaking bands and just kind of following, you know, what people would tell me in the street. Like, I love this song. And I'd be like, oh, well, let's play that more. And I started to learn, like, well, wait a minute. If you get out and you talk to these people, you know what I mean? Like, you start to emulate your listeners. Well, wait a minute. Like, there's a pattern here. And what I started to realize, and this is the formula to success, because you pin and your paper, because off the cuff tonight, gonna give you the game.
The blueprint.
Consistency and repetition breeds familiarity. Familiarity breeds a relationship. Relationship breeds teamwork or synergy. Teamwork wins games. And that's why they play records over and over.
When you think about this, Damian, when you got in the game, radio was an entirely different place. And we're not even talking about from the hip-hop perspective, because we're just talking about where the music was. When you talk about the alternative, we think about bands like R.E.M. We think about bands like, you know, Garbage. We think about bands, you know, Hootie and the Blowfish were more of a mainstream rock with a semi-alternative edge. Their album, Crack Rearview, by the way, 1994 release. It was 93 or 94. I believe that's number 10, 9 or 10. It's in the top, I know it's in the, for a fact, it's in the top 15 all time of biggest selling albums ever in the world.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's a funny story
Hootie
and the Blowfish.
Run. Yes, sir, go ahead.
We didn't have many top 40 records like that to balance us out. So you were either a grunge, Nirvana, Garbage, you know, R.E.M., maybe some David Bowie sprinkled in that would be palatable. But, you know, they weren't really going to that Hootie because that would be more towards an AOR album rock thing. But I was like, well, wait a minute. If we mix that with this and kind of do a top 40 hybrid alternative, we could be more accessible. And so one of those acts was Hootie and the Blowfish. So we did the show. We started playing Hootie and the Blowfish, and then Hootie and the Blowfish kind of blew up, but the band was on tour. So they really just, you know, they started to notice the venues were a little bigger, but they didn't know how good it was. So we were at the Arlington Theater in Santa Barbara, and they invite us to the show. Thank you for breaking the record here. You know, great idea. Thank you so much. And I pull out my gold album and say, you know, platinum or gold plaque, and say, hey guys, can you sign this? And Darius grabs the rest of the guys and goes, dude, we went gold.
Wow.
And it was the first time they had seen that they sold 500,000 records.
Man.
And then from there to watch it go, just as a fan, was just amazing.
You know, it's crazy because me and my brother, we are a lot of things. Musical nerds, children of hip-hop culture, wrestling fans, you know, journalists in our own way. We're an eclectic bunch. Shout out to everybody involved on Off the Cuff as well. Sam Manchin, Chilla, Pat, everybody, Sarah Coleman, the whole crew. Yes. When we think about that musical era, now this is me specifically, because I, in addition to hip hop, I'm also a hardcore heavy metal fan. So when we think about that era of 1991, I've told this story on the air before. I was at my aunt's house, 1991, the summer. I'm watching Headbangers Ball. And this is the last video of the night that they play, shot MTV when they used to have it. And I see this, then I see in the lower left-hand corner, for all y'all kids in MTV generation, you know that font in the left-hand corner. It says Nirvana. Yeah. Smells Like Teen Spirit, Nevermind, the album, and DGC Records. I hear this come on, and by the end of the song, in the video, I'm like, oh, my fucking God, these guys are going to be huge.
Yeah.
But
you know, imagine what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
go
I was
ahead,
like, ahead. I was like, you know, that era, you know, Alanis Morissette and Nirvana and, you know, all these things.
Yeah.
I kind of got
a little pill. Mm-hmm.
You know, well, but I wasn't like fully there yet. But then as working in it, I'm like, yo, there's Weezer, there's Beatles.
Man.
You know what I mean? Like, so I got excited about it. And then, you know, what got me my job at Power 106 was a group that you mentioned. And that's Garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Because Garbage, when I very first heard that, it was like that eureka moment when you heard Nirvana. Now, Nirvana was produced by a guy named Butch Vig.
Mm-hmm.
Butch Vig is one of the greatest producers, Smashing Pumpkins.
Down to Billy Coop, Corgan, and all of them.
Like, crazy. So I saw Butch Vig, and like Dr. Dre, when I'd see his name on stuff, I'd be like, well, wait a minute. If Butch Vig did this, and I related it to Dr. Dre, and I was like, well, if he produced this, then this is going to be big. But they just sent us a demo. They weren't even ready for radio yet. So I took three songs off of it, just started playing them full rotation. Milk, Vow, Only Happy When It Rains. New Stupid Girl was freaking going to be it, but still. So because we were the first, I mean, and they flipped. They were like, you're playing three records. Like, we haven't even serviced radio. We just wanted your opinion. So they went back to the band, and they told the band this. There's this crazy 17-year-old program director in Santa Barbara who just started playing three songs off the album. Butch Vig says, tell him we owe him one. And
wow,
they went platinum. They're about to go on tour with the Smashing Pumpkins. They had the Weenie Roast book for K-Rock. Then they had Sunday off. And then they were going to go out on this tour. I said, yo, there's one date on their schedule. Can they do a stop in Santa Barbara? I want that as a favor. A show in Santa Barbara at a 300-person club. Now, keep in mind that's the template of what we did with Dre and Snoop in Hawaii.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, if this works, this is going to be the Miz's new thing. You know what I mean? Or Damian Young's new thing. Is being able to take these big acts, putting them in small venues, and labels will back it. You know what I mean? Because if you could pull it off with this platinum act in a small club and everything goes well, then maybe they'll give you a shot with another one. So Butch Vig, they call him, and they said, you know, this, that, and the other. And we made the promise. And you had said this, and he had forgot about it. And he said, did I say that? I said, yeah. And he goes, well, we got to keep our word. Do that date. And they're like, well, that's the only date that you have for the next year to get your stuff together and get out on tour. And he goes, ah, we're rock and roll. We need to do a club before the big tour. So they came, they did it, and the music director from Power 106 happened to be there because he was a rock fan from St. James.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, look, dude, I'll take any job at Power 106 you got. He says, dude, we only got a board-op position on Sunday night. And I'm like, I'll take it. And he goes, wait, so you're going to be a program director of KHTY in Santa Barbara and the Oldie Station, too, at the time. And you want to come down on Sunday night and be a board-op? Like, it's the lowest on the toilet. It's like starting in the mailroom. I'm like, yeah, just to get my foot in the door. Like, minimum wage. So I walk in, and who do I see sitting there? And who I'm going to be working with? Curtis freaking Blow.
Say what?
Yeah. So coast to coast with Curtis Blow. So I walk in, and I'm like, at that point, I just shit myself. You know what I mean? Like, 17, 18 years old, or 20 years old, whatever it was, and you're working with Curtis Blow. You made it to hip-hop. You're a Power 106. And Curtis, as long as I didn't screw up, would tell me a great story of hip-hop at the end of the show. Off the air. And we became friends. And to this day...
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? I talked to him not that long ago. I love Curtis. Curtis is the most genuine person on the planet. I love him. And when he left, the next person to come in, Ice-T. So then I'm working with Ice-T. If I didn't screw
up,
tell me that West Coast gangster shit. You know what I mean? So I had the lesson in hip-hop from Curtis. The lesson in hip-hop from Ice-T. The lesson in radio from Michael Newman and Steve Smith. How to deal with bands and our alternative. Rock stars. Oh, you can deal with rappers now. So the job came up, a music director. I said, you know, there's this kid that did this show. He's boarding up with Curtis. He already works here. Just move him up. And they're like, but he doesn't have any hip-hop experience. They're like, well, trust me, he knows hip-hop. Bring him in. So I came in for the interview, and I didn't think I was going to get the gig. Because the thing is as much as I want to do stuff, I'm never going to bullshit you. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So when they asked me, you know, what do you think of Power 106? I'm like, it's the greatest radio station in the world, but it's freaking all over the fucking place. The Formatics is crazy. And I'm telling the program director this. So I'm thinking, like, I'm interviewing for this. You know, I'm not going to get the gig. So maybe if I just tell them what's wrong with the radio station, they'll apply it with the new guy. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I finally get the call, and they say, do you want to be the music director of Power 106? And I'm like, well, yeah. So I left Santa Barbara, and I started on February 3rd, 1997, as music director of Power 106.
Man.
Luckiest guy on the planet.
Okay, because we got to put a phone.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's dope around that time because music was evolving in different ways. Like, it was a lot of talent not being afraid of being risk takers, so to speak, and that's what really put the pulse behind the direction of where the culture was going. That's what made it fun. You know what I'm saying?
Well, musically, but not strategically with radio. Like, for instance, even with alternatives, you know, like, for instance, when they said that thing about alternative, and they wouldn't give hip hop a shot in Santa Barbara. You know what I mean? So my head was, how do I make hip-hop the number one format in the world just to take over my own town? You know what I'm saying? So it was I mean, that's what I thought in my head. Like, how do we make this the number one thing in the world? Well, I got to get Dre and Snoop back together. That's how that's going to happen. And I got to do that garbage shit. Again, but with Dre and Snoop. I went to my boss, and this is for this point that you're making. I went to my boss, and I said, look, I want to get Dre and Snoop together in a room. Ah, Dr. Dre's over. Snoop Dogg's over. Police will never let us do it. Try that shit, you're fired. And I was like, well, okay, let's play Ain't No Fun in Morning Drive. Let's try it. And they're like, Ain't No Fun in Morning Drive. Did we make a mistake here? Do you know what I mean? Like,
You want to play Ain't No Fun in Morning Drive. Are you nuts? And I said, well, yeah, but can I do this? And they said, no. So what I did was, is I needed to prove that it would work before it happened. So instead of playing it, I put it in the weekly call-out research. Now, radio stations to decide how they play their records, 50 times, 10 times, whatever, whatever. They call people, 100 people, every week, and they play them the hooks of the songs over the phone. And they say, do you know what this is? Scale of 1 to 10, are you familiar with it? Can you name it? And if the people can name it, then the score of the familiarity goes up. Now, if they like it on a scale of 1 to 10, it starts to go up. Now, the next week, you do another 100, and then you average those 2 weeks out. Then you look at the burn, you look at the scores, and then you decide. These five are going to get the most play. These next are going to get the most play, or the next most play. Then let's look at, you know, requests and all this other stuff and record sales. Kind of add that in and decide what new we're going to play, and then everything else kind of comes after. So I took Ain't No Fun, and I put it in that. Now, you don't put old records in with the new ones, because you think that the old records out of 30 records would come back number 30, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number one. And on
now,
the chart scores, because no one ever heard it on the radio.
Now, we got to pause for a second, because to give, for our listeners to understand the context of what Damian is talking about, you know, Ain't No Fun and the Homies Can't Have None, that's off Snoop's Doggy Style album that was released in the fall, November, I believe, of 1993. So this is 1997. So
yep.
This album is 4 years old already. Now, that's
yep.
what you would call in the music industry one of those deep cuts. Like,
mm-hmm.
if you was in the hood and you listened to that album, you knew about that track. But like you said, Damian, it wasn't on the radio, so this was a lot of people's introduction to it.
It was a passion record.
Yeah, so what it was, you basically gave that record, that album, a second life again.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so, okay,
we did.
So the record, yeah. So it gets, all right, so the record gets on, people are picking up on it. So what happens after that? Just run with it. What happens? Okay, so you play it, and I mean, you play
and my boss
it
came
in.
Mm-hmm. He said, you're about to get fired. I told you not to do it. I threw the
okay.
research on the table. You couldn't say anything. So I said, about that Dre and Snoop idea. He goes, don't get crazy. So we had a talk. Baker Boys said, well, and I love the Baker Boys, legendary Baker Boys.
Yeah.
They said,
yeah.
yo, why don't we do the show in Hawaii? That way we avoid all the problems. Fly listeners in. But what you said was, it wasn't a current album. So you don't have a budget to promote it. So the label wasn't going to do it. And we didn't know Dre and Snoop. And, you know, how is that going to work? So we booked a show at the Palace in Hollywood. I thought, okay. I'll book the Dogtown. Hopefully Snoop will show up. And I'll start doing this all behind the same way that I did the Ain't No Fun thing. I'll start doing this way. But the Baker Boys said, look, we still need a promotion. Why don't we do something with this new artist that's coming up, Notorious B.I.G. And I said, well, we have Puffy, Can't Nobody Hold Me Down. We got Mace coming out. Why don't we do Bad Boy and the Family? So Puffy agreed to it, crazy. Benny Medina, of all people, agreed to it, which is where I met Benny Medina, and that comes into it later with Mariah.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, look, we'll pay the $250,000. We'll fly everybody to Hawaii. You take care of the promotion. Let's get it cracking. So we did Puffy in Paradise in Hawaii. And when they saw that, they said, okay, well, you know, maybe we'll let the program director go and listen to what you're saying. And I said, good, because I hired Snoop Dogg to do weekends at that show. And they're like, what do you mean?
So I ran into Snoop Dogg. He said he hasn't been doing too much, and he's off death row. And I asked him, I was doing with Dre. He said he just hasn't talked to him. He said he's free Saturdays. And I was like, make a little extra money. Why don't you just come by the radio station? Play your new music. Get it buzzing again. So he's playing the stuff, and he comes up on Power 106. Master P hears it. Calls him on the phone. I come in the next weekend, and Snoop's got all this new jewelry on. I'm like, what happened? He goes, Master P signed me. And I'm like, wow. I said, great. He goes, yeah, he heard us playing new music, and da-da-da-da-da. It's great. I'm like, awesome. Have you talked to Dre yet? He's like, no. I'm like, great. My job. So Nino Cucinello from Interscope Records said that LL Cool J and Dr. Dre were shooting this song, Zoom.
Zoom. Was that the joint? Zoom,
now,
Zoom.
I remember Zoom, 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 Zoom with Snoop Dogg and the bootleg
right.
that I got through the Sloth and Swap Meet. You know what I mean?
Shout out to the Swap Meet.
You know, some years earlier. So when I walk up to Dre, the first thing out of my mouth, what the fuck, man? And he's like, what? And I'm like, what is this shit? Like, where's the Snoop Dogg shit? And he's like, oh, you know, I just ain't talk to him, da-da-da-da-da. I was like, yeah, he was telling me he wanted to work with you again. And he's like, what? I was like, yeah, he's doing Weekends of Power 106, and we were talking, and he wanted to work with you again. He's like, well, I'm shit, tell that motherfucker I put him back on. And I was like, did he just say what? I was like, yeah, okay, he's bullshit. Well, can I get your number? And I'll let you know what he says. He was like, sure, here's my number. And I said, well, what assistant is this? And he goes, nah, this is my headphone number. It rings next to my head, so don't call so early. And I was like, okay. So I go in Saturday. I tell Snoop, says the exact same thing. I put that motherfucker back on. And there you
now,
have it.
Now, okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's one more little piece to that. Sorry about that.
No, go ahead. Go
so,
ahead. No, please.
Instead of just jumping to Hawaii, you know, there still had to be some, you know, politics. Like, they hadn't seen each other face to face. Yeah, there was a conversation behind the scenes for me. But, you know,
right.
I'm a white boy from Santa Barbara. Go ahead. If you pull it off, go ahead. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't really, you know, thought about as it's going to happen, like this kid can pull it off. So what I did was, is Powerhouse was coming up. So I said, Snoop, why don't you come headline Powerhouse? He was like, great. So I'm like, cool. Hey, Dre, why don't you come and be my guest at Powerhouse and hang out? Get to know us. We'll talk about the promotion. He's like, great. I'll show up. And Dre and I hit it off. I was going to the studio, listening to the beats, the music, and all this stuff. And he looks over at me and he's like, yeah, I'll come. So I'm like, okay, cool. So he shows up to Powerhouse, two Tanqueray bottles in his hand from the gin and juice deck. He's like, damn, I brought you a present. I'm like, oh, my God, this is the coolest fucking thing in the world. I know Dr. Dre. You know what I mean? Comes to the show, and he said, well, where do you want me to hang out? And I said, oh, right here. I got you your own dressing room. Well, I put it right next to Snoop's dressing room, and I opened Snoop's door and told him that was his dressing room. He walked in, and all I heard was, oh! I was like, oh, my God, it went great. Now, DJ Jam, another guy I totally respect, was a DJ at the time. So I said to Jam, yo, just get deep cover ready. And he goes, dude, the conversations are there, but, man, you don't know. I don't think it's there yet. So Dre's on the side of the stage, and he's sitting there watching the performance. The whole time, I'm like, man, deep cover would be great. But a G thing would be great. Dre Day would be great. You know, this would be awesome. And he's like, damn, he doesn't even know, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, okay, he doesn't know, that means he's not opposed to it. So I walk over to Jam, and I'm like, yo, give me the microphones. He's like, Dame, I can't just drop the record and just play deep cover. And Jam is like, all right, Dame, you're crazy, but something happens. I'm not taking the fall. And I walk over, and I have two mics in my hands. I look at, and I say, which one do you want? And Dre says, fuck it. Grabs both of them and walks out on stage. And they hit deep cover. Place goes nuts. They do a couple other little things. Dre walks out and says, we can do that Hawaii thing. So the next thing I know, I get a call from Interscope. And Nino's like, how did that go? All this kind of stuff. So rumor trickles up to Jimmy. And then Snoop and Dre say yes to the show. So I book the show. Dre calls me up and says, yo, I think Jimmy's a little upset at what you're doing. And then I get a call from Jimmy. Why do I have a bill for $250,000 on my desk for an album I don't have from a producer who doesn't produce and an artist I haven't seen since Death Row?
Mm.
And I'm like, you're going to get an album. And he's like, what are you talking about? I said, you're going to get an album. You're going to get a single. And this is the promotion to set up that album. He goes, Damien, I'm going to sue you for $250,000 if this doesn't happen the way that you. And I had heard the music. So I knew what was going on. So then Dre calls me, and he says, yo, little spitball curve here kind of thing going on. I'm like, what? He goes, I need you to come to the house. I said, the house? Like, I know where that is. He goes, here's the address. Show up. Something I got to talk to you about. So I walk in, like 6 o'clock in the afternoon. Mailman's there. Dre, everybody. Michael and Zondo. And I'm like, man, this is crazy. I'm not Mailman. All this, because I'm a fan. And he goes, yo, look in there. And I look in the booth. There's this little kid, white kid from Detroit, going, Slim Shady, you a basshead. And I go, oh, I said, he's cutting parts, writing for you? And he goes, no, I got to talk to you. Come on, back. I'm like, what? He goes, how do I break the white boy? And I'm like, what? Was how do I break the white boy? I'm like, wait, you signed the white boy? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, tell you what. You tell me the story of NWA from beginning to end. I want to hear it all. Ice Cube jumping over the fence and wearing gears and the next door. I mean, I want to hear all that. And I'll break the white boy for you. And he goes, you got all night? I said, I'm here. He said, I sat on his washer and dryer. He sat on his stairs with a baby monitor. He just had a baby. And we sat there till 6 o'clock in the morning, and he told me the story of NWA, back from the world-class wrecking crew all the way to where we stand today. About 6 o'clock, Eminem comes out of the room. He's like, screw this, I'm going home. I said, no, you're not. You're going to Friday Night Flavors. You're going to play.
Damien, we're laughing
right now.
Right now.
The Baker
we'll tell
Boys.
You a second why we're laughing. We're laughing, and we'll tell you the second I can tell this story why we're laughing so hard right now. Go ahead.
But I said, go to the Baker Boys. Announce that you're doing Friday Night Flavors 10-year anniversary tonight, the Palace in Hollywood, and give them that record. Like, looks at Dre, and Dre's like, go. So Eminem went. We added M to the show. Then it went nuclear. So M calls me. He's like, damn, I need to talk to you. I'm like, what? He goes, can I come over to Power 106? I'm like, yeah, come on over. Comes over. And he goes, because you were talking about MTV thing and put the story on my head. He goes, yo, what's a buzz clip? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, they had this party for me at Interscope. And they said, congratulations, you got a buzz clip. And I just was walking around nodding, saying thank you, but I don't know what the fuck it means. I said, homie, whatever you want to do right now or for the rest of your life, whether it's take your daughter to Taco Bell, do something. He's like, why? And I said, because Eminem just killed Marshall Mathers. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, a buzz clip is hot rotation at MTV. And the second that hits the air, you're going to be so famous that you ain't going to be able to go nowhere. And the look on his face was half horror, half excitement. You know, like, wow, I finally, whoa, wait a minute, celebrity. You know what I mean?
It's the back of,
so
it's the matter of
Dre and Snoop did the
reality
show.
Reality check.
And bang, we got 2001.
Damien, before we go any further, because there's a lot we got to say, I'm going to start off with this right here. Day one, thank you.
Is the greatest ever, by the way.
Yes, he is. You know, and,
I love Day.
Good friend of ours.
Yes. Man, great friend.
And he's the reason
he's,
I'm here. Let's just make that clear.
Yes. Yes,
he
is.
Us, and I love Day. Day and I have been friends for decades.
Yes. And I'm slapping myself for being remiss because he is indeed the reason. He reached out to us to have you on the show. So we want to let all of our listeners know and give credit where credit's due. This incredible interview we're having, and we are nowhere near done right now, but he is the reason why we are doing this. As we were laughing earlier, Damien, when you talked about when Eminem said, I ain't doing this, no more coming out of the studio. King and me have had countless discussions and laughs about Dre boot camp in the studio.
So, oh, wow.
We've heard stories. We know people that have been with Dre in the studio, and they tell us the same thing.
Well, you know what's crazy, though, is Dre has never said no to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when I said, come do Shade Shice Money Owner thing, you know, like, Jimmy Iovine was on the ceiling over that. And he's like, you know, he goes, you know, he is the most loyal guy on the planet. And just, I mean, he's a long-term friend. Like, you know, you see Dre, you start from scratch. And you can fuck it up from there. Do you know what I mean? He's so humble and so cool. He's like a big kid when it comes to music. And he's always happy to share. And he's, you know, he really just kind of took me under my wing. Or his wing, he just showed me everything. I mean, the night that he hired Scott Storch and did Bill B. Marie, he knew that I had the relationship with Jay-Z, just broken Jay-Z. And he goes, like, I'm about to send this to Jay-Z to write. Come on, listen to this. Is this something you want to play? Because by that time, I had Power 106, Hot 97, and 32 stations in the middle. So if I played that record, bang, 3,000 spins in a week.
Ooh.
So it was like, you know what I mean? Like, to be able to, like, converse and talk to Dre like that. You know what I mean? Like, it was awesome. And I learned so much.
We have to give this context, Damien, because we're talking about the years roughly between 1997 and 99. Of course, Chronic 2001.
I'm kind of like
in 2000.
Sorry.
In 2000, absolutely. Because 1999 is when Chronic 2001 happens, but we talk about 1997. Now, once again on Off the Cuff, we want to give everybody an understanding of the history of that significance of that year.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about Big's passing because we don't want to harp on the tragedy. We want to talk about Life After Death being released, a phenomenal album. Bone Thugs and Harmony drops The Art of War. Wu-Tang drops Wu-Tang Forever. I mean, Royal Flush, shout out to him and his, and he's in our prayers right now with his leukemia treatment. He drops Ghetto Millionaire in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Puffy drops No Way Out in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is just the short list of phenomenal releases that made. And I mean, we haven't even gotten the Firm album. You know, Foxy.
Well,
go ahead.
No, what I was saying, and you know what's crazy about what you just said is that show that I was talking about with Snoop Dogg, where I did the, you know, the thing. Well, I had asked Puffy if he would stop by that show. Now, keep in mind, this is right after Pac. Big still alive. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
L.A.'s hot. So he's like, Dame, I love you. Doing a show in L.A. right now. Probably not my best interest. I go, okay. He shows up with Biggie. And I'm like, wow. So I introduce him to Snoop. I introduce him to the Dog Pound. I introduce him all. I met Biggie. Mm-hmm. I'm introducing him to Snoop Dogg. Now, the first thing that popped in my head is this whole East-West, and I'm looking at it going, wait, but there's Snoop Dogg and Puffy and Biggie and Mac 10 and Ice Cube and, I mean, everybody's, what's the deal? So I'm like, yo, I said, man. I said, yo, you know, play a crush on you or something, hypnotize, something, and have Biggie go out there in the middle of Puffy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to tweet this guy. So E-Man plays Crush on You, and Biggie walks out there on crutches to the center of the stage with Steve and starts doing the verse that he wrote for him.
Oh, wow.
Snoop Dogg comes out behind them and starts crip walking on the stage right next to him.
Oh,
they shake hands. And Snoop slides back out. I never heard about the East-West beef again until I heard that, you know, Biggie had passed. Now, the crazy thing about Biggie passed, he was sitting in my office the morning before he died.
Mm-hmm.
So Friday morning, Life After Death, the promo run was done at Power 106 with the Baker Boys.
Mm-hmm.
So Big comes down the hall, and he's like, Dame. I'm like, damn, this guy remembers my name. He's like, can I sit down? My knees are shot. I got these crutches, you know, whatever, whatever. So the Baker Boys come. He's talking to me about, you know, just life in general. So, I mean, just got back with Faith. He's going to go back to New York and see his kids. I love California. I love the weed. I'm pissed. Like, tell me, well, Santa Barbara, what's that? You know, what's that like? You know, oh, yeah, I heard about it. I was supposed to do a show up there, you know. I should go up there, huh? Like, yeah. And we're just sitting there talking. Just, you know, it's a young guy. And sitting on the couch. And I'm sitting there. Just, whatever. So the Baker Boys, Big, will you come and record a freestyle drop? A production room. Hey, Dame, go record that. And I'm like, sure, Big. Let's go in the studio and record that. So Big comes in. I'm in the production room. And I've got this Cypress Hill beat or something, and I play it, and Big does the verse for Victory over it. So a couple weeks later, after all of this, you know, whatever, whatever, I run into Scott Storch, and with Scott Storch is one of Biggie's security guys, and I see him, and I'm like, yo, and he's like, damn, sad, you know, I'm like, damn, and he goes, yo, but one thing you got to remember, I said, what? He goes, you were probably the last person to record him, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And he goes, we went back to the hotel after we did the show. And he goes, that last verse, it's for the Baker Boys. Blown away.
Wow.
So I don't know if it's like, you know, 100%, but that's what he told me.
Now, now, Damien, when you think of, you know, give our listeners context. Because when you talk about the East Coast-West Coast conflict, some people would say that this started in earnest back in 1994 after Pac got shot November 28th at Quad Studios. And there are some situations that we know we can't speak on air about. Disclaimer, we know some of Tupac's family, and we've talked to them about this. We're not going to mention on air. Yeah, we're not going to mention in terms of certain situations. But obviously, this is where there was a lot of tension between Big and Puff after he was shot, you know, in terms of with him and Big and Puff. And then this kind of goes on for the next couple of years until Pac's, you know, death in 1996. Mm-hmm. So then we...
Well, you want a positive Pac story? I can tell you about me, Pac.
Oh, we were low. Oh, yeah. And I mean, but yeah, we're just giving all this as context. But, you know, in terms of, and then, of course, the 1995 Dog Pound trailer shooting. Mm-hmm. So to put all this in perspective, this is momentous that Biggie and Pop were, Biggie and Snoop were on the same stage together, and there were no problems. Pop was an unbelievable talent. You know, we love him as fans, you know, as individuals. You know, we think he's one of the best ever. And Pop, there's a lot to be made about him. There was, you know, people have these misgivings. This is where we want to hear the great Pac story, which of which you said, Damien.
Pac was the nicest guy on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
He tests you, but nicest guy on the planet.
Right.
Well, my Pac story, and there's only one, because I only met him at one time. Me and my buddy Jeff Miller, doing alternative radio, hear that, you know, the Grammys after party for Universal Music is going to be, you know, the Four Seasons or whatever, so... And remind me about this so I don't get off track. But there's an old Dirty Bastard story with my grandma at the Grammys. Remind me to tell you about that.
Yes, we need to hear that too.
It's that Grammy. Do you know what I mean? When old mm-hmm. Dirty went up on stage and said Wu-Tang for the children. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then ran off the stage. Well, I might as well tell you that. So he runs off the stage. My grandma had to go to the bathroom, and we're watching mm-hmm. the Grammys. And she says, you know, I got to go to the bathroom. I'm going out. I run into Steve Rifkin in the hallway. So Rifkin and I are standing in the lobby of the Grammys at Shrine Auditorium in the bathroom. And she comes out, and this is my grandma. She's like, oh, very nice to meet you, da-da-da-da. Old Dirty Bastard comes flying out of the double doors. And Steve says, hey, Dirty, come here for a minute. He goes, Steve, I got to go. And he's like, no, Dirty, come here for a minute. He's like, Steve, I got a problem. I got to go. And he's like, wait a minute. This is the new music director at Power 106. He's like, oh, very nice to meet you. Very nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. He goes, this is his grandma. He goes, oh, beautiful, beautiful, sweet lady. This lady, beautiful, beautiful. I got go, and the doors fly open again, and now the police are coming. He goes, Steve, stay here for me. Goodbye. And he runs. My camera was on his hand. What was his name again? And I go, Old Dirty Bastard. And just so you know my grandma's temperament, she looks over and she goes, that's creative.
Man.
And that was meeting Old Dirty Bastard. So at the end of the show, we go to the Grammys. And Granny goes, I'm sorry. The Grammys party was earlier. My bad. It was a different one. Grandma met Old Dirty at that one. And it was another Tupac one. I'm sorry. I might mix up some dates. And especially with grandma, I mean, they have some dates because I've just been going through so much grandma stuff lately. But the Grammys party with Pac, Death Row shows up. And
ooh.
All of Universal Music that was partying anywhere near the entrance comes flooding into the back ballrooms of the Four Seasons. And we're like, what the hell is going on? Is there a shooting? Like, what the heck? I mean, it was a stampede of people.
Okay.
And then at the end of that stampede, you see Pac, Shug, Corrupt, Daz, Nate, Snoop. Like, I mean, it's like, what the hell? And our
wow.
hip-hop fan, everybody else is scared of American Bay. I'm like, dude, I'm going to walk up and go meet Pac. So me and Jeff walk up. First person we see, Pac, put out my hand. I go, hey, I'm Damien, he's Blind Santa Barbara. He goes, yeah, nice to meet you. Da, 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 da. I said, yo, I love the new album. That's when I got serious. He goes, hey, see, he said he got the new album. Just like, whoa, 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 whoa. Where'd you get it, little man? Now, this is the Friday or the Tuesday when the album came out.
Right.
Where'd that bootleg come from, homie? And I'm like, look, I'm in alternative radio. So we get it Friday because we can't play it. And Pac looks over at me and goes,
okay, what's your favorite song? Oh, I said, this two song one, a million pairs of eyes looking for the world in the locker room. Did they want to know you? He said, if you get it. And he goes, my dog shook my head. He goes, you met Snoop? They just meet Snoop. They just meet a name. They just meet all that. Like, but I don't consider that like a, because it was just like, hey, fans, not fans. I never knew that when I shook you, he ended up being one of my best friends. You know what I mean? It was a dream come true. But that was Pac.
You know, Pac, when we think about Pac, we're all Pac
and
fans
Shook,
here.
I never had a problem with Shook. Shook and I got along great.
Shout out to Kenya Ware, our big sister, one of our biggest supporters, who also works for Death Row as well. And
I'm sorry, who?
She has nothing. Kenya Ware. Kenya Ware. That's And Kenya,
remember when Shook got out of jail, the police came for that powerhouse that we were talking about? Or one of those powerhouses? Because Shook did like three powerhouses for us. And God bless him. I love Shook. He did so, I mean, if Shook didn't get on Power 106 and say Shook would beat it, never would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
It would never would have had, the credibility wouldn't have come like that. Not him through Fuzzy Fantabulous, the connector. You know what I mean? He was doing curb serving. I mean, he gave us, and that's how that happened. Real shit. Fuzzy was the secret weapon of Power 106's success. And mine. I give him all the credit. I talked to him a while back. I straight up told him, you're the man. You know, but, I mean, that's the power of those relationships. I forgot what I was telling you, but Fuzzy's the man.
It's all good. I mean, and when you think about now, when you think about it, Damon, this time in terms of what was going on in the 90s era, because for those that...
I'm sorry, I remembered. Shook.
Go ahead,
so
go ahead.
I called
go ahead, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Okay,
I just to finish it. I called
okay,
up
go
Death
ahead,
Row,
go ahead.
Asked for Cedric, said I want to talk to Shook. I hear he's coming to Power House. And he said, yeah, right, hung up. So I called back and I said, this is Damian Young from Power 106, 818-953, 4200. Call it back. So he calls me back and he's like, Dame, I'm sorry. It's just, you know, radio people don't really call here for Shook. So he connects Shook in. And he's like, three-way call. What's up? I'm like, hey, you coming to Powerhouse this weekend? He goes, what's Powerhouse? I said, come on, player, you live in L.A. And he starts laughing. And I said, why don't you come be my guest? Sit in the VIP, you know, watch the show. Get to know me. I know you're going to put some records out. And when he came in, now keep in mind, I got Snoop. I got Grep. I got Daz. I got, you know, I mean, all of his old artists. Nate, everybody. And he said, he walked up to me at the beginning of the show. He goes, Dame, this is your house? And I respect that. And I appreciate you inviting me. No one's invited me to anything before. And he starts laughing. As kind of a joke. And I was like, damn. And from that point on, it was great. But, you know, I knew what was going on kind of like with that security thing and all that, not to get into the controversy. Because the next morning, Saturday morning, there was a basket on my doorstep. A bottle of Cristal, box of cigars, all this stuff. I said, thanks for having me. Sure. Give this guy my address.
Hey.
At home.
Well, we've heard the stories when Shook had to deal with people, but we've also heard equally the stories when Shook was, you know, nice to people, you know. So we can't have one without the other, you know. We talked to a lot
of
people who know
Shook.
Well, I think
a big bag of tricks with him.
Well, yeah, but I think the key to Shug is just one word. And it's the same with Dre. It's the same with all of them. Respect.
Respect. Yeah.
You know, you treat somebody with respect, and you're going to get respect in return. Now, you tell somebody that you can do something, you don't do it. And then you don't understand why they got mad, Tris. And that's my biggest problem in the industry, is I just don't deal with bullshit. I just don't deal with it. So if you tell me that you're going to do something, I don't play that Hollywood shit.
Right,
so you say you're going to do something, and then you don't do it, then you want to be mad that I'm an asshole? I'm just saying, be respectful. And that's the way that all race should, didn't matter to anybody. But we had a great run with it because we just treated everybody as they treated us. And better.
You know, it's crazy, Damien, because when we think about that 90s era, when you talk especially about Dre and Snoop, that was a very kind of surreal time because their legendary status had already been stamped, you know, even with Snoop at the time kind of being, you know, Snoop had been 4 years in with Doggy Style. Dre had already been in the game some years, but they were at a crossroads. What you were talking about earlier with Snoop, you know, Snoop had he had signed with No Limit back in 1998.
T-Max, hold on one second. I think we got a guest on the line, man.
We got a phone
ready
call.
For this one? Yes, sir.
Who is it?
Hello?
Y'all can
hear me.
Yes, we can.
What's up, man? It's day one.
Day one! The other Damien.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the other Damien.
What's going on,
man?
That's
my dog right there, man.
What's up, fellas?
Hey, how you doing, man? What's going on with you, man?
I was like, man, we had to plug this guy on.
Man, I'm just tapping in, man. I was hearing y'all talk about Dre and Snoop. I was just enjoying the show, man, listening in. What's up, Demilla?
Wow. Hello, Dave. Thank you so much for having me here, bro.
I'm great, man. Good to hear you.
Dave has looked out for me so many times, man. We took over the studio. Mike Post, who wrote the 18 themes and all that.
Yeah,
turned
Hunter. Yeah, Hunter
over his studio to Burbank one time.
Yeah, Hunter,
so I'm like,
all those shows.
Yo,
yeah.
Well, Dave, one. Let's break this sucker in. And then
real,
called
really
EP Tajay, everybody, and the next thing you know, we had a full-blown party.
Man.
That's hilarious.
That lasted quite a long time.
I ain't want nothing, man. I just want to tap in and see how y'all doing, man. Say hello. Give you my blessings.
Hey, man, it's all love,
hey, man. You guys
it's all doing. Love, man. We like, man, look. We didn't know if you had to ask a question or nothing like that, but I was like, hold on, this is from the West Coast. Then I checked the number. I'm like, hold on, this is day one, man. He's the reason why this thing happens. Let's give him his appreciation right quick.
Absolutely.
Right?
And Day is the most underrated producer.
Man, and DeMille is my big brother, man. That's my bro. So
always
I definitely got to call in support. Always.
Always. Thank you, sir. I love you.
You got it. All right, y'all, I'm out of here. Tap in, man. Y'all be good.
No, definitely.
No doubt,
I'm going to keep listening.
So
I'm going to keep listening.
Okay.
I'm going to call you tomorrow. Okay. Check your cage a bit.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good.
God bless you.
No doubt. Much love to day one, man. And
absolutely.
I wanted to shoot this question to you here, man.
That's the era that I come from. You know what I mean? Where it's mutual respect first.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, when we look at that era, you know, me and King, we talk about this so much off air about how the politics of talking to people back in the day were different, how the radio worked, because we want to get back, because we got a little bit of time left, so we want to get to that part as well about how the radio dynamics work in terms of where it was then and what it is today.
Hey,
yes, sir.
Hold on. I want to ask him this, too, before, you know,
okay.
Slip my
go ahead,
mind
go ahead.
A little bit.
Go ahead.
Because my first introduction to you was when Corrupt actually name-dropped you on Where I Want to Be. That was my first introduction to you. And
oh, wow.
That song right there took us, you know, we made it like, damn, we want to come out to the West Coast the way y'all put that project together. You introduced it with Shay Shice, and they brought that great West Coast mentality.
Well, I owe
out
that
there.
Record to KG from Naughty by Nature.
Right.
KG from Naughty by Nature made that beat with Eddie Kango, and he played the beat for me, and I said, dude, I gotta have that. And he said, for what? And I said, I just got an idea. And I wanted it for Romeo from the Goodfellas, which is Arcadia. Played it for him. He's like, you know, I don't think it's really us. And I'm like, oh, it's all good. And God bless him. And, you know, but they passed. So I was in the studio one night, and I was going to play Nate Dogg some beats. And I hit the play on that button. Hey, stop the visit. I'm like, what? Stop the visit. Stop what? Stop the dad. Rewind the tape. I'm doing that. I'm like, but that's something someone gave me. I don't know. The visit. I'm doing that record. That's what. And that's how Nate and I really just, that was how we conversed. And so Nate comes in. He does the verse. Then Corrupt shows up. Corrupt walks in there. He starts doing the verse. And all of a sudden, I hear my name. Now, the reason why he said that is Shade wasn't on the record yet. Mm-hmm. I was joking around one time. Corrupt wrote a record for me called Chip the Curb, and I rapped it. Corrupt said, now, do one as you. And I went to I said, oh, that is me. Corrupt said, oh, my God. Like, how funny is that? You could actually rap. And that was kind of the end of it. We never really thought of it past that. Then, when I did Where I Want to Be, he did that thinking that it was going to be our record.
Mm-hmm.
But then I went and wanted Snoop on the record. But at the time, Snoop left Power because he was on tour with the Up and Smoke. So I couldn't get to him. My friend Shade, who I was just friends with and made music on Friday night. He drops the verse. Where I Want to Be was born.
Man.
You know what was dope? You know what was big, too, about that record, too? Because this was around the time where features in the video were major, too. Like, this was around the time where I think Corrupt was going at it with John Irv. I seen them in the video.
That's when I knew I made it, by the way. When you slap hands with D.O.C. on a cameo and he don't do cameos, God bless you. You know what I mean? I was like, damn, we made it.
Man. What was it like back in the day when you talking, because now it's so much industry politics, talking to this manager and that manager. For you, Demizza, it was just so organic how you
natural.
Could just talk to these people. Yes, I mean,
because
what
I
was the policy?
Look, when I was a little, let me tell you a story about my grandma, and you'll understand it purely after that.
Yes,
my
sir.
Grandma going, and I are going to San Francisco. She was in a club called Santa, and they had a convention in San Francisco. I'm like 7, 10 years old, something like that. She's like, let's get in Granny's big yellow Lincoln Continental. Let's go to San Francisco. So we take off for San Francisco. Old lady, young kid, cruiser. We get off in Oakland. Bad Oakland. Danny starts to try to find a way to get back on the freeway. Pulls into a parking lot. She runs out of gas. She's sitting there. She looks across the street. There's some homies on the corner. Gas station across the street. They're all looking at us and pointing. Now, at this point, I'm scared. And she's like, yoo-hoo, fellas, can you help us here? And they walk up. And she's like, I ran out of gas. Can you help us get over to that gas station right there? And they're like, yes, ma'am, no problem. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? And they help her, I could tell. It wasn't like the way they were looking at us, trying to figure it out. You know, it just wasn't comfortable. But at the end, they were shaking her hand, giving her a hug, saying thank you for asking for help. And she sat there and talked to him for a while. And all I knew was I was just in awe of this lady and how she did that. And when we got in the car, and I said, Mom, you know, I thought they were going to get us. And she said, never judge a book by its cover.
Mm.
Everybody just wants to be loved and respected. Those boys ain't no
wow.
different.
I mean, and that's, you know, when we think about the people that we have met along the way, the people who, like I said earlier, Kenya Ware, I mean, day one, you know, Cocaine,
another great friend.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Shout out to him and his daughter, Anissa, and his whole family, all her brothers and sisters and his wife.
They got great records.
Yes.
The whole family got great records.
Yes, I mean, you know, Big Hutch, people who have supported, and that's just a short list of people who have supported us along this journey that we've been on. We love dearly. And it's something to say about, like you said, you know, Damien, about how you just treat people with respect and how you acknowledge them and how you really, really, really forge a bond. You know, it's beyond business. This is family. This is something that really, really is a genuine, you know, knot of niceness, you know, and it's tied tight with tenderness, love, and, you know, devotion and loyalty. When you look at the business of when you started in radio, how has it changed from, because radio wasn't corporate like it is now. You know, a lot of times you had stations that were independently owned, and now we have the corporate entities that are tied up in it in terms of, now we have the playlists where, of course, DJs could break in songs back in the day, not so much now. How have you seen the business?
Well, you have
change?
To remember, hip-hop was not the number one format in the world at that point. No one cared.
Right. Right.
Just like anything else. You know, you have a small restaurant, all of a sudden, you want to make it McDonald's, corporate's going to take it over.
Right.
I mean, that's what happened. We started making money, and then they're like, oh, well, we need to have some control. So we need to put a leash on you.
Hmm.
And I was like, a leash on me? And they're like, you know, it went from, we're doing all this great stuff, to, wait a minute, we're just as cool as you. We can do all this stuff. We're going to book Powerhouse. We got half of Outkast, the good half of Outkast. And I'm like, great. I can't believe Andre did it. It's not. We got Big Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? A week later, they come back. I'm like, we don't have a Powerhouse. We're not talking about tickets. You don't get Ludacris for us, everybody's going to lose their job. Like, well, damn, you guys got a problem. Next thing you know, I'm booking Ludacris. You know what I mean? Like,
the blessings keep coming.
In terms of, what do people have to understand in terms of what you talked about, Damien, about the opportunity? Because you came in, you know, from what some was, like you said, the bottom rung. But you got to meet Curtis Blow. You got to meet Ice Cube. Shout out to Uncle Ice, who also supports Off the Cuff Radio. Shout out to him and Douglas Century, you know, Spike, Gripsta, the whole Rhyme Syndicate who follow our page. We love you. Thank you for the support. I mean, you have an improbable, incredible, and amazing journey, because you were not afraid to get your hands dirty and to get in where you saw the opportunity. What do you have to tell artists or just aspiring people who want to get into the entertainment business about not turning down those opportunities, no matter how mundane and even beneath them that they might think it is?
Stop listening to the bullshit, homie. That's my response.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, dude, everybody listens to these rumors, innuendos. People talk about this person. Don't look at their actions.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I can sit there and say whatever, but if those things didn't really happen, then, you know, I'm just another asshole.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying? So it's like, when you tell people, like, look, I can do this, da-da-da-da-da, that's where the failure happens, is people ruin their relationships too early by overstating what they can do. And then it comes back as some craziness.
What they say in the business, Damien? Under promise and over deliver. That's
exactly
what you're supposed to do. Right.
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 You know what I mean?
And,
like,
and,
You know, it's common sense. You know, when people just don't apply common sense to entertainment, because entertainment is like, you know, Five Points, Texas. You know what I mean? Every emotion. You got sex, money, drugs, ego, you know, I mean, it's all right there. So anything that you could be influenced by, and the thing is when I, look, I would not be bribed to play a record. You couldn't intimidate me. You know, I deal with a Shug or a grandma. It's the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just common sense. So they just know if we go to Dame on some bullshit, we can't go back to Dame on some bullshit. So they just never came with the bullshit.
And that's how you establish
it. And that's just
it.
What I'm saying is, if you're a new artist, this whole fake it to make it shit,
mm-hmm.
it, when they go to do the substance, and you've been manipulating algorithms, that the other, and the label signs you, and then they ask for your reports, Spotify and all this, see all the funny stuff you've been doing in the background, you think they're going to promote your record? Or think that they just got stiffed for $100,000?
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So it doesn't make your new employer want to work with you.
You know, when we part of what we do with this, because this is a passion, this is a job for us, this is what we enjoy, we, as journalists, part of what we do is about watching at the ground level who really, really, really has a buzz. And like you said, Damian, you can't fake success in this in popularity. In terms of what you really have, you know, when we look at artists like Cam and China, you know, shout out to them tremendous fine ass twins from Inglewood.
Well, you blew over it, and it just said it all about the whole radio mm-hmm. thing and all that kind of stuff. It's like
right.
It's like, look, we're flying over everybody's head with viral. You have to remember, people in the hood can't afford internet 24/7. They're not on TikTok.
Right.
They're not as,
right.
you know, all of these things. It's radio, but they've written radio off.
Right.
So 87 or 96% of America still listens to radio.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is you can't start a buzz, and you can't start something organically from the street if the streets never hear it until it's already whatever.
Right, right.
We're in the 50 years of hip-hop, bro. There's 50 years of hip-hop. And not one organic hit has come up to the number one on Billboard Top 100.
Yeah.
Why?
Hey, right. And when we look at a lot of artists,
everybody's flying over everybody's heads, and everybody
yeah.
wants to have that ego. Instead of being humble and saying, "Yo, Dame, what's wrong with my radio?" I'll give you the formula. It's really easy.
Yeah.
Oh, Damien doesn't know what he's talking about. You've been out of the game too long. Okay, cool, whatever. You know what I mean? Let's get off my nuts.
They'd be like, yeah, we can figure it out.
You know what I mean?
They'd be like, yeah,
but
we can figure it
happened.
Out.
Since I left, and this isn't arrogant, but since I left in 2004, how many of those people have had hits? What's happened to Power 106? And what's the common denominator?
Right. Exactly.
Anybody break any Dr. Dre records since then?
Nope.
Hear anything mm-mm. since up in the club since 50 Cent?
Nope.
That's been that crazy? That just took where you can go to any country in the world and it's the biggest thing since sliced bread?
We don't have no Monster Records no more. Because the artists aren't marketed as you know, big attractions anymore. Because you remember how the rollouts used to be where the Interscope artists used to drop?
Yeah.
It used to
yeah.
be like a movie production
Versace,
and
Versace,
shit.
Versace, Versace, to someone in the hood, that's a dream. Do you see what I'm saying? They're trying to get to that. But that doesn't mean that they could just go get some Versace.
Right.
It's the same thing with records. You can't just make a hit.
And that's true.
But
when
if
you
you're
look
not
at a
playing
lot...
to your audience anymore that mm-hmm. you've been consistently marketing to for the last 100 years with the oldest format in the book, FM radio.
But you want to write it off and say, ah, this shit's over. Are you really? I mean, dude, look at it like this. They told me Dr. Dre's over. They told me Mariah's crazy. You'll never be able to come back from Glitter. They told me Snoop's over. Jimmy Iovine told me Dre's over when I tried to do the reunion. They told me hip-hop's over. They told me the music business is over because of the internet. Now you're telling me radio's over. That means to me I could turn this bitch around.
Mm-hmm.
These guys only understand. These guys understand. They only understand numbers. They don't understand the pulse. They don't understand the pulse of this shit. They don't understand. They're not really in the trenches like us. They don't understand
somebody's
what's
making money.
Sale.
They don't care. They got Snoop Dogg making money off a grill. Fuck the CEO. He may have cut the
yep.
check, but fuck him.
Yeah. But one thing
you
about
you ain't
going to
call
it,
him on a Sunday and say, hey, sorry, you got fired, man. Mm-hmm. I know I didn't get no call from nobody when I left. It was like, now you can't help me. I didn't like you anyway. You know what I mean? You left.
Man.
I don't like you.
Shoot.
You know? Money dried up.
But it's wild because there's still a lot of talent out there. When we look at the metrics of how a lot of the game is, especially in California, when we look at, like I said, Cam in China, when we look at legends like Mitchie Slick, when we look at up-and-comers like G. Perico.
That's what I like. What's next going on in the street? I start listening,
yeah.
And I noticed that Day One is Butch Vig coming up. But
yeah.
Dr. Dre coming up, I'm like, I need to talk with that dude. And then I met him, and he's
yeah.
the most humble guy on the planet. Now, that being said, I love you guys. I'm at the animal hospital, and my grandma's poodle now has a
Ooh.
Heart murmur.
Oh, my goodness.
So oh, just
man.
Wow. I've got to go in and deal with this. I'm sorry to cut it short. But
it's okay. It's okay. We're going to – look, we still
I
got a 24
y'all.
Part
We need to
two.
Do this again.
We will.
Definitely,
we
man.
Absolutely will. We absolutely will.
And thank you so much. It's been such an honor to even talk with you guys off the air because it's like, you know, to have real hip-hop fans and to be able to converse in the way that we do where you have the extensive knowledge that you do also with the background and you know the politics and you know the other stuff, it's so nice to be able to talk to somebody that's not going to bullshit you.
Man, I mean, look, it's we do what we do. And once again, shout out to Day One for putting this incredible classic interview together.
Salute to
I text Kenya. Kenya was listening. We love you, baby. Thank you so much. Damien,
you, so
you know
much,
you're welcome back.
We'll do this again.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Definitely.
God
so
bless
best,
you guys.
God
we
bless
got so, we didn't even get
family.
Into I mean, that's just the beginning.
We got time, and we're going to get a part two.
But remember,
man, trust.
Consistency and repetition breeds familiarity. Familiarity breeds relationship. Relationship breeds teamwork, and teamwork wins games.
Absolutely.
All
right,
guys.
Absolutely.
Much love. I'll talk
Alrighty.
To you.
All right, man.
Yes, sir.
Salute
yes, sir.
To you, brother.
Thank you again. Salute.
Take care, man.
All right. Peace. King, brother,
yeah.
take us out of here.
Catch y'all on the rebound next week. We out.
Peace.